The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
Well, good evening, everybody. Amanda Richard here, and tonight on the Music Room, we're going outside Amanda Richard's comfort zone, but I think this will be an interview that a lot of the students will like. We're going to catch up with Michael Minert. He's an electronic music artist and producer based out of Denver, Colorado, and he's going to be in the area on Thursday, October 1st. So we're going to go ahead and start the show off with something he did, I think back in 2014, from an EP he put out called Elements. You're going to hear Michael Minert's Your Ghost while I'm getting him on the telephone. This is the Music Room on WVUD. What can I say to you? We'll be right back.
What can I do? Where can I go to hide? Memories deep inside.
Michael Mennert, welcome to the Music Room.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure to have you down here. We just heard something from, I think, a 2014 EP you put out. Elements was the name of the EP, and Your Ghost.
It's a song I collaged from samples and then added instrumentation on top of, much like what I've been doing for a lot of my career. That song was put together in memory of my father, who passed away 4 years before that of cancer. And it was just kind of the summation of years of kind of the aftermath and trying to deal with things and realizing that, you know, that ghost still kind of haunts you. So that song.
Your dad was a big influence on you. I think he was a musician too, wasn't he?
Yeah. He played drums when he was my age back in Poland in like rock bands. Actually, I mean, when he was younger, when he was, you know, teenager through 20s and stuff. And then when I was growing up, he had a little synthesizer studio, kind of like Evangelist or Kitaro.
Oh, wow.
Or Jean-Michel Jarre type stuff, but just a lot more basic. You know, he always downplayed it, like his stuff was crap. I liked a lot of what he was doing. But because of that, I was exposed to a lot of, like, synthesizers, you know, late 80s, early 90s when I came to the States. You know, and he had drum machines and things like that, little step sequence drum machines that I come home from school before he got home, and I didn't know that I didn't know how much he wanted me to mess around with the stuff. So I was like 10 years old, so I turn stuff on and like, you know, play around with it, and then I hear the garage door open, and I turn it all off, and try to reset it all to the factory settings, and go back downstairs like I was doing homework.
So. You know, actually, I mean, your European heritage. It's interesting about the time your dad was a teenager. The kids in Europe were all going for synths, whereas the kids in America were going for electric guitars.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, in Poland it was different because we didn't have, you know, like, new wave didn't come to Poland. Poland was very, I mean, there was Radio Free Europe that you could kind of pick up. Sometimes a few people, you know, recorded the broadcast and then replayed it and stuff, but, there wasn't, you know, under communism, there was a lot of censorship to music. So my dad, when he would travel to England to learn, because he studied English and then taught English as a professor in Poland. So he got, you know, leave to go during communism, which was really rare, to England and kind of immerse himself in the culture. And through that, he was able to pick up, like, you know, Dark Side of the Moon when it came out, bring like, you know, 10 copies back and kind of distribute it to people in Poland that he knew. Because it was banned at the time, and he'd bring, you know, banned literature and translate it into Polish since he spoke English. And so he was doing some stuff like, you know, a lot of him and his friends were involved in the Solidarity movement, you know, kind of like the underground resistance to communism. And I think that that kind of influenced his move to the States, because when they had me, he started realizing that there's more at stake than just his freedom, you know?
Yeah. Now, I think that we can hear a lot of the kind of influence of hanging around your dad. I mean, your music, I mean, what you layer together is really complex. I really enjoy it.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it started with just me playing instruments, and before, you know, YouTube and Google, where you could find out anything about anything, I was really into hip-hop, but I had no idea how people, you know, how people made it. I didn't know how instrumental beats happened, you know, how these parts of songs are recognized or looped or what they were using to do that. So when I started getting into that through early software in the late 90s, and then through, like, getting an MPC and kind of sample collaging from vinyl and collecting vinyl and finding these old records that are, you know, the original samples and stuff, getting excited about that, because you stumble upon things when you dig for records. You'd be like, oh, my God, that's the sample from that Nas song, or that's the sample from that, you know, from this and that. And because of that, I was always intrigued by that. But there was people like, you know, like Moby and DJ Shadow and just people, that, I mean, Pete Rock and Prince Paul, a lot of early hip-hop producers that were, like golden era hip-hop producers that were sample collaging and layering, you know, 5 to 20 things to make a new piece of music, and with people like DJ Shadow, they used stuff that was not, that wasn't instantly familiar. You didn't listen to it and go, oh, that's Stairway to Heaven, you know? you listen to it, and he used samples as kind of, like what I saw, like colors to paint with, you know? He used it rather than using the familiarity that people make when you're sampling and making kind of a remix, you know, where you're using like chorus hooks or something that's familiar and stuff. When you're doing kind of sample collage stuff, you're using it more like you would do with a photo collage if you were trying to make a collage piece of art, where, you know, you're cutting out things that represent things, but you're kind of defamiliarizing them with the context that they were in, and and juxtaposing them into something that then tells a whole new story.
Now you're about to put out a new project, and you're touring in support of that project. You're going to be,
yes.
And the reason we're talking with you is you're actually going to open up your tour in our neighborhood up at the
yes.
Coda in Philadelphia on, I think it's Thursday, October 1st.
That is it. That is correct, sir. And our tour is it's 36 dates, and it's all around the country. It's a national tour. I'm really thrilled because I get to bring a six-piece band of people that I've been playing with. And I mean, six-piece on stage, two pieces in the front of the house with our engineer and our light guy kind of being, you know, the hidden members, because we're all kind of a family here. And with some of the acts that are joining us on part of the tour, they're going to be joining us on stage too. So it's, I picked kind of producers that were also multi-instrument, like solo artists that could also play instruments, so that they could come up and have the spontaneity of a live show within the context of an electronic show while we're touring. And so I'm excited because I started with bands, and then the solo production and DJ style sets became a way to just sustain yourself, because when you're trying to fly out to do one-offs with a five-piece band, the guarantee has to be pretty high, or you have to be able to take a pretty big hit and have another career to support your musical habits. This is the first time I've been able to kind of, cut the corners here and there to budget a really great band of people that I'm really honored to play with and to bring on tour with me. And I think it's going to be really cool, because it's going to be, it's going to be a growing period. There's going to be a lot of moments where we're still reaching for the things we're trying to achieve. But I think that overall, you know, it's going to be a great tour where we grow as a band and as a team. And it's just something I've been waiting to do again, because when I toured with bands like 10 years ago, we were very successful. And so it was kind of hit or miss shows, kind of heartbreaking, because you'd be working for door deals and five people would show up and, you know, be sleeping in the car and trying to, you know, panhandle for gas and things. So in contrast to where I'm at now, like where I can go and play these intimate venues with friends that I know and can laugh with and travel the country, be kind of a gang of pirates on the road.
Well, we're spending so much time talking about your new six-piece ensemble that you call the Pretty Fantastics. I think I'm going to skip ahead and play a single from your new project called Shanghai.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about this song.
I started writing this song when I was taking care of my dad at the National Institute of Health in Bethesda, Maryland in 2008. I brought a synthesizer and a microphone and a laptop out, because I was out there for a few months, and they had a piano there, so I was writing songs on the piano and kind of coming up with lyrics and stuff. And, it was just kind of, some of the lyrics reflect the idea of the beginning of the end when somebody has cancer, and some of it has to do with just moving on in life and kind of, you know, moving on towards the light from the darkness that you're in. And also it was, you know, 2008, and it was like September and October and November during the election, so being like that close to D.C., you know, a lot of people were like paying attention to the radio and the TV and stuff. So it was kind of watching a divided country have this very glorious, you know, when Obama won it, I felt like a lot, like it was the first time there was a presidential luncheon where I saw like a lot of people like crying and rejoicing, you know?
Yeah.
It wasn't a small win, or at least it didn't feel like a small win for a lot of the country. And so being in that spot, it was, you know, that song was kind of written around then and kind of evolved since then a little bit musically. And this project was a chance for me to resurrect that song. And I think there's like one more on the album that's that's kind of a reinterpretation of something you've been working on for 5 or 6 years, which is interesting because for people, they're like, oh, you know, you've been making DJ-style sample-based music. This is a departure from what you've been doing. But they don't understand that I've kind of been doing this in the background for the whole time.
Well, let's let folks hear what they would be in for if they were to make it up to the Coda at 1712 Walnut Street in Philly on Thursday, October 1st. So here comes Michael Mennert and the Pretty Fantastics and Shanghai here on WVUD. Michael Mennert and the Pretty Fantastics. I started to say the Plastic Fantastics, but it's Michael Mennert and the Pretty Fantastics in Shanghai.
You know, it's like it's pretty fantastic. It's like, yeah, you know, it's seasonally fantastic. It's moderately tolerable.
Well, it's in my native genre of music, you know, country and traditional country. Marty Stewart calls his bands the Fabulous Superlatives? And I saw Fantastics, so I immediately thought of that.
Great name.
Well, anyway, we were talking while that track was playing off the air, and one of the things that I noticed on the previous release that came out earlier this year, Space Jazz, was there were different saxes and instruments and voices. So I don't think it was all sample.
No, it wasn't. The Space Jazz was kind of the big transition where we started working with a lot of the people that are on this album, like Will Glazier and Dan DeLeal and Matt Bandy and Huel and Marcello Moxie, who are all in my band, and AC Lyle played drums on like 80% of Space Jazz. So it was kind of like, that was a way to ease my following and ease myself into just going, you know, into the deep end of writing it all yourself, recording it all yourself, singing it all myself, playing like most of it myself. And that's why this album is really exciting for me, because it's all me, you know, whereas there's always a little bit of a chip on the concept of owning the songs I had before, you know. It was always like, they were always kind of interpretations of samples that I collected. And yeah, they were definitely mine. They had my signature on them, but, you know, legally I could get sued if certain people came after me for some of those samples, you know?
You mentioned that one of the things that I used to do, I just did it for the last time this past spring, used to teach a course in intellectual property here at the University of Delaware. And that's one of the questions I always ask my students is, why aren't artists like Girl Talk being sued? And you've answered it earlier, because it's artists like you are really making transformative works out of the things you sample. And like you said, you're using it like colors.
Yeah. It's like, you know, it's a way to not just try to piggyback on the fame of a song that you're using, you know, because it's like, if you sample Stairway, that's a platinum song. You're not going to equal what they did with Stairway. You know, it's never going to be surpassed by any version of it. And that's why, like, there's just things that you just don't touch. You know, it's just like, there's sanctity to music that, like, I feel like a lot of people don't respect within the genre that I'm in. But that's why I'm like, you know what? I'm going to quit being upset about this, because I'm making my own music, and people can't imitate that. People can't. No one can sing my voice. You know, nobody can write the way that I write or do anything. I'm not saying that I'm better than anybody. I'm just saying that when it comes to songwriting, a songwriter has their own voice. You know,
right.
It's a lot harder to mimic that. At which point, if you're mimicking somebody's voice and, you know, playing style or anything like that, congratulations, that's a lot of work. That's a lot more work than just finding a Led Zeppelin sample or a James Brown sample, you know?
Absolutely. Now, on Space Jazz, was that you playing some of the reeds, or was it guest artists?
No, it was, I had Dominic Lawley from Big Gigantic play on the last song, Jettison. He's an amazing sax player. I believe he went to Berklee. You know, he's one of the nicest people I know. They're actually playing at Red Rocks this weekend.
Oh, cool.
Here in Colorado. I'm excited so I get to see him again before I go on tour. And then I had I'd say about 20% of the horns on there were samples, and 80% were recorded. And the samples were manipulated and chopped into like one shots and kind of moved around so I could make my own melodies with it and whatnot. But I said, I had Will Glazier and Dan DeLeal on. Dan plays trombone and flute, and Will plays trumpet, and they'd kind of be able to create these, you know, multi-layered horn sections through recording and then sending it to me. I mean, it's really amazing what you can do now with sharing music. It's and not just sharing music in terms of finished music, but like I can speak even for this last album, because I'm working out of a home studio. I don't have the budget to go rent 100 hours of the studio, you know, at a normal big treated room with you know, analog gear like I want to use. At least not yet, you know? So I would send sketches and then send melodies and things to like melody layers that I play on synth or keys or whatever, to kind of give an idea of the intonation and the pacing of it to the horn players and the guitarists and bassists and whatnot. And I'd send like produced drum breaks to AC if I wanted that. And they would either come in or they would send me just like these lush pieces, you know? That was...
Yeah.
That's a very new thing. That's like the last 10 years that you've been able to, you know, 10, 15 years that you've been able to make music like that on long distance and have it sound cohesive.
Exactly. An awful lot of bands only get together in person a couple of times a year. The rest of the time they're trading files.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been fortunate because I play with a big band. It's ranging from 18 to a million pieces.
Oh, cool.
but these guys are in the big band, and most of them are located in about half are in Colorado, and the other half are in Bellingham, Washington. And so this last April, I was able to come out for like 3 weeks and just kind of live and work with them, some of my friends and our engineer scholarships and stuff. You know, so some of the people from Colorado that were the core members, we went out there and just kind of bonded as a band because I didn't want to sound like a project that was thrown together with people that don't have the chemistry. I think that was, when you play live, I mean, I'm sure as you noticed from being a performer yourself,
yeah,
and a musician, when you play with other people, there's a chemistry. You know, it's like there's a connection, there's an intimacy and a back and forth dialogue that's nonverbal.
Exactly.
That, you know, it's like any relationship. The more you have that, and the more you can succeed at that, the better it's going to be, and it feels great. And it just, you know, we started getting that last April, and then we're going out to Nashville to rehearse for the tour this next week. So we're going to have a few days just to kind of have that again, where we're not just thrown into it, you know.
Well, that's great. Yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the things I missed the most out of when I was doing solo, like DJs, like live production sets. It's just the feeling of you're on stage and you're kind of in charge. So like there's a lot less risk going on and a lot less dialogue between you and the instrumental parts. And you have this, you know, if you have a good moment or a bad moment, you're there by yourself. You know, it's like the crowd's there, but no one's really experiencing it like you do when you're on stage with somebody. And like just even having even being able to laugh about mistakes after a show with your bandmates, it's just kind of it lightens the mood. That you just feel like you have a support system a lot of times. And you know, when magic happens and you guys click and spontaneity births a great impromptu song or something like that, like you just have that, you know, you have that camaraderie and you have somebody to share and kind of like remember that moment with. And you don't get that a lot when you're a solo performer or a DJ or a producer, you know?
Well, Michael, you said something that was, you were talking brilliantly, but you did make one mistake in what you said.
Yeah.
Those aren't mistakes that when we perform. Those are jazz notes. Those are jazz notes.
Yeah, that's right.
Those are unusual improvisations.
I'm going modal.
Oh, this has been a whole lot of fun, Michael. Thank you so much for taking time out of your afternoon to talk with us. And again, if you want to see Michael Mennert, excuse me for putting the accent in the wrong place. If you want to see Michael Mennert, he'll be up at Coda in Philly.
You're the first person to get my name right.
Well, thank you. I messed it up there too. That was a jazz pronunciation.
Either way, you didn't say Maynard or Menart or Menart or Menhart or Minor. There's a lot of ways that I've heard. When I get back from tour, I kind of forget how my name is supposed to be said.
Well, anyway, folks, you can see Michael Mennert and the Pretty Fantastics, and they're on a bill with Marcello Moxie and Wildebeest up at Coda at 1712 Walnut Street up in Philadelphia on Thursday, October 1st. And you mentioned the song Jettison, so I think that's how we're going to go out. That work for you?
Perfect. It's a little escape capsule.
All right. Thanks again, Michael.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Cheers.
I'm spinning all around. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to The Music Room on WVUD. For more information about this and other episodes of The Music Room, including selections from the interviews and information about the music, visit us online at sites.udel.edu/TMR. Tune in next Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. for another episode of The Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark.